Hello.
This is, I'm not sure if this is lecture 7 or lecture 8, but anyway, it's today's lecture. We're going on to talk at the beginning of chapter 6, read about kinematics. Now, this is a bit of a shift from what we've been doing up to this point. Not conceptually, but we're moving on to the next stage. As I mentioned, the Lorentz transformation equations, which we talked about the last two lectures, and we found some of the paradoxes, puzzles with them in the last one, are very important. And it would repay you to go to be quite diligent about the exercises for chapter 5, because they will settle down a lot of your understanding of the ideas here. And they're also nicely examinable. They're the sort of things that are really just easy to see. Oh yeah, I can put something about that in the exam. That's a hint. I mean, it's a pretty obvious hint, since the only objective for chapter 5 was one. Anyway, we're now moving on to... We've been talking up to now about events. And I've been stressing again and again that events are frame-independent things. They have a position and a time. And that the story, the point of the Lorentz transformation is to talk about the coordinates of that event in this frame and in that frame, which are moving with respect to each other. The only things that have been moving up to this point have been frames. But this is a physics course as well as an astronomy course, so we're interested in things moving. We're interested in the description of things moving. And before we can explain how things move, dynamics, we have to describe how things move, kinematics. And so this is where we talk about velocity, where we talk about acceleration, and that brings in talking about four-dimensional vectors, 4D vectors, four vectors. So that's the goal. The plan is to there's much lecture 8, I should come to think of it, because the plan is to do the next few chapters in three lectures, so we're ready to move on to GR, talking about GR, some topics in GR in lecture 11. We seem to be on schedule, well on schedule this year. So any questions about structure, about things like supervisions, about things like the Padlet, which I hadn't actually checked, but which I hope that is we'll find your questions there. Anything else that folk are thinking about, worrying about, puzzled about, in an administrative type? Okay, let's go. So, in a way, we're returning to physics here by talking about velocity, acceleration, and things like that. So, before we can go on to talk about those, we're going to have to talk about to expand the notion of what you understand about vectors, to discover what the vectors are in that context, and then we can move on. So. I'll move this to here. Where are we? So, really understanding the concept of a four vector is the key thing in this whole thing, and that's various things that one can do. So, this is in the same as a technique I've used several times in this course so far. I'm going to describe something you're familiar with in unfamiliar terms, because it's those terms, whether they're going to adapt those terms to use in a context that you are unfamiliar with. So this is a vector A in the xy plane, which you are completely familiar with. The vector has components. There's a basis vector, a unit vector pointing along the x-axis, and a unit vector pointing along the y-axis. And you can construct the vector A with so much times the unit vector on the x-axis plus so much of the unit vector along the y-axis, and you can get the vector A back. And so those AX and AY are the components of that vector. Okay, nothing exotic there. If you were to change your mind about the frame and rotate the frame to the prime frame, then the vector doesn't change. The vector doesn't care what frame you're talking about. But the components of the vector would change and be different in the other frame. So if there's a basis vector pointing along the x prime axis, a basis vector pointing along the y prime axis, then the same vector A is AX primed times ex plus ay primed times ey. Nothing exotic there. The key thing is the vector is the same in both cases. Right? It's a displacement vector. It's not a position vector. It's not how do you get from the origin to A. It's a length and a direction in the plane. Good. Any questions? Right. So that's really the terminology that I'm using here. And what we could do then is ask, well, how do we get, if we know what ax and ay are, how do we work out what ax prime and ay prime are? And again, that's not, I mean, you might not write this down off the top of your head, but you're not surprised to see something like that, I trust. If instead of that A we talked of a displacement vector, delta x, delta y, delta z in three-dimensional space, that same vector, that same displacement of how do you get from here to here, would have different components in a different frame, and they're related by something like that. I mean, as I say, you might not write that down off the top of your head, but you're probably not surprised to see a cos, sine, minus sine, and cos in that expression. And the point here is that that displacement vector, I used a general vector A, but I'm going to talk about a displacement vector as the displacement from this point to this point, so delta x, delta y, delta z. I'm going to use that displacement vector as our prototype vector, okay? And by prototype, I mean that anything which looks like that vector, anything which looks like that, we're going to call a vector as well. Right? And in the lecture notes folder on the Moodle, there's the numbered chapters. There's also a document called Recipe and a document called Maths. The document called Maths, at the end of it, has a little review of linear algebra. I mean, it's two paragraphs, which just lists a number of words that I'm going to presume you're familiar with. You've done them in previous years' maths, so you might have to go back to look at your notes just to remember what those words mean, but I'm going to presume you're familiar with those words. Right. So much for three vectors. We saw the displacement vector in three dimensions, dot x, dot y, dot z. We can now talk about the displacement vector in four dimensions. And at the moment, I mean, right now, I'm only talking about these as numbers. I haven't got to the vector bit yet. Delta t, delta y, delta x, and delta z. And we know from chapter 5, the Lorentz transformation, that they are related to the displacements, the delta t prime, the delta x prime, the delta y prime, the delta z prime, by an expression like that. If you multiply that out, multiply that out, that matrix equation, you'll get the Lorentz transformation equations from halfway through chapter 3. And that equation's in the notes. That's equation 6.2. And if we... That's just a matrix, so the inverse of that matrix is just the matrix inverse of that. Now, if we talk about... Now let's park that thought and think about what a vector in Minkowski space would look like. Here, rather than the x and y axes, we've got the x and the t axes, and the x prime and the t prime axes, and as usual, rather than being rotated like that, they've gone like that when you go from when you project from one frame into the other. And you have we have a vector there. I'm thinking of that as a displacement vector for now, delta x, delta t, plus delta y, delta z as well. That links to points in space-time. It links to events. There's an event at the beginning, an event at the end, and this is the difference between them. There's delta x, delta y, and delta t in there. And that vector, we can decide, okay, we're going to call that a vector as well, has component a1, when you project it onto the x-axis, component A0, you project it onto the t-axis. Some rather old-fashioned textbooks refer to that as the fourth dimension. We refer to the zeroth dimension because it's just a bit tidier. That's much more common nowadays. And similarly, if you instead not project it vertically downwards, but project the vector parallel, you know, project it parallel to the t prime axis, and ending up on the x prime axis, that's a1, a primed one. So the component of the vector a, the basis vector pointing along the x prime axis, and similarly project it from a onto the t prime axis, moving it parallel to x prime, you end up with an a prime knot. And the idea is that these are the components of that vector, that four vector, in the two different frames, exactly analogously to the way we saw the components of the three vector in the two rotated frames. Okay? And if that vector A is this delta x, delta y, delta z, delta t vector, then we discover that the relationship between those components is just that thing that we are, that is fairly obvious, that is now fairly obvious from what we learned about the Lorentz transformation equation. So this is the point, this is the bit where we're going from chapter 5 to chapter 6. Okay, the stuff we learned in chapter 5, we're now applying, but it really grasping hold of the idea of geometry in chapter 6. And again, we're going to take the displacement vector in four dimensions, this delta t, delta x, delta y, delta z, as the prototype displacement vector, and say anything that looks like that, anything that behaves like that, is a vector in four dimensions, a four vector. So just as before, an arbitrary vector has components in different frames. The vector is the same in all the frames, it's just the numbers that change. Okay, so that's a key thing. That sounds like a fairly neutral thing to say, but it's actually a very important thing to say. The vector is the, if you like, the physical thing. We're going to talk about velocities in a bit, the velocity vector. And if something is moving, that's a physical thing, that's a frame-independent thing. It's the numbers, the components in a particular frame that you choose that are frame dependent. Okay. So we've got that. And just as with the displacement vector, therefore, for an arbitrary vector, A, the components are going to transform like this. So just the same as the displacement vector, but with for an arbitrary vector, components with components A. So at the risk of just banging on about this too many times, these are describing the same vector, A, but with the numbers A0 to A3 and A0 primed to A3 primed being different simply because you're choosing different frames. Right. So I want to just say that too many times just so you that's, it doesn't sound as important when I say it the first time as it is. So Just really for completeness, the same thing is true if you draw this in the whole thing, this whole thing in the other way around, as it were, with the primed frame being sort of the basic one and the other one being the one distorted away. And what we are then going to, how do we introduce, how we can come to that? So I think we'll do a bit more linear algebra here, at this point it's slightly, I'll just switch both to the visualizer. There's one or other of these is the one that gets onto the Echo 360, I don't know which one it is, so I'll just switch both over. I think this is actually 8. So, what do we want to write down here? So, I think standard things, if A and B are four vectors, then A plus B is also a four vector. And the components of that are, so C naught will be A naught plus B naught C1 equals A1 plus B1, and so on. So they add in the expected way, the way that you're familiar with adding vectors in three dimensions. Now, the scalar product, if you think back to the vector stuff with vectors you learned, one of the things you learned about the scalar product is the which measures how separate is the projection of one vector onto another. In this context, the scalar product is odd, and the scalar product of A and B is going to be A naught B naught. If we have A and dot B, they're both three vectors. You remember that's A naught B naught plus A one B one plus A two B two. That's familiar, I trust. Yeah. Here is A naught B naught minus A one B one minus A two B two minus A three B three. That can be written as A eta B, where these are two I'm just slipping into a matrix version of this, where the matrix eta is a diagonal matrix, 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1. Now, I've done several things in those couple of lines. The first thing is I've just pulled this definition of the scalar product out of the hat, really. A naught, B naught, minus A1, B1, and so on. And you think those minus signs seem completely arbitrary, but if you think back to the definition of the scalar of the invariant interval, S squared, that's fundamentally where those minus signs come from. And we'll see the link again in a moment. So that's a bit of a... I've sort of pulled that out of the hat, but it shouldn't be too much of a surprise. The next line is just that same thing written in matrix terms, where I've introduced this 4x4 diagonal matrix, eta, where the terms on the diagonal are 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, and everything else 0. And you can, and if you stare at it a bit, you'll see that if you form that matrix product with that and the components of the matrix A, then you'll get that term back again. Why do I do this, other than to make it look complicated? I don't do it to make it look complicated. I do it because this matrix, eta, is terrifically important. If you remember, in the discussion of the scalar product in 3D space, the scalar product between two vectors is, it tells you, it encodes information about how long the vectors are and what the angle is between them and so on. It's AB cos theta, as you recall. If you take the scalar product of a vector with itself, that gives you the length of the vector, if you recall, because cos 0 is 1 and a cos theta is going to be a squared. So the dot product, the scalar product of a vector with itself gives the length of the vector. And here, if I ask what is the scalar product of the vector A with itself, that's going to be A naught, A naught minus A1, A1 minus A2, A2 minus A3, A3. And if we talk about the displacement vector R, which is equal to delta T delta Y dext delta Y delta Z, so that's just the displacement from this event to this event, and ask what is R dot delta R, we see that it's delta T squared minus delta X squared minus delta Y squared minus delta Z squared. So we recover the invariant interval from this definition of the scalar product. So it's not really pulled out of a hat. Well, it's not pulled out of a hat, but it's entirely reasonable because we end up with the right answer. So that's telling us that if that displacement vector delta R goes from this event to that event, the length of that vector is the invariant interval between those, the delta S squared that we found in two chapters ago. So that's why this matrix here, eta, is important, because it recovers this. And that's why that matrix there is encoding the definition of length in this space. A hand up.
What does that say after eta is equal to?
Diag. Lots of T. So where do you mean? A transpose eta B. A transpose. Yes, because these are both column vectors. So if you think of the matrix product, the row vector matrix column vector. So this is the in the same way that the scalar product of a three vector A with itself gives you A squared plus A naught squared. Sorry, that should be. So I'm getting ahead of myself. That would be A dot B equals A1, B1 plus A2, B2 plus A3, B3 as well. So there, the scalar product of a vector with itself would be A1 squared plus A2 squared plus A3 squared, or X squared plus Y squared plus Z squared, which gives the length of a vector according to Pythagoras' theorem. Or so why are the minus signs? Why are the minus signs here? That's the bit I pulled out of a hat, but it makes sense because we end up if we do the same thing with the displacement vector delta r, which is this separation between two events, we get this thing here, which we recognise as the invariant interval. So those minus signs are there so that we get the right answer. Right answer here. In other words, that matrix eta, that 4 by 4 matrix eta, which is diagonal, is telling us about the geometry of Minkowski space. It's all encoded in that matrix. That matrix is called a metric. Metric as in metron, as in metric system. It means measurement. The matrix is what defines distance in this space. And in special relativity, it's always that. In general relativity, where general relativity comes in, is that we're not talking about special relativity anymore. We're talking about things which are moving and are accelerating, or which are moving under the influence of gravity. And the effect of that, it turns out, is the metric in a curved space-time is curved because the metric is different from that diagonal. So this is the first time you'll see this metric, but that stays with the whole study of relativity all the way up to the key part of general relativity. The Einstein's equations for general relativity are basically what is the metric given that there are masses here and here. That's what solving Einstein's equations means. But in special relativity, it's always that, because the geometry of Minkowski space of space in which is moving at constant speed is nice and simple. I said it's always that. Sometimes it'll be different from that, because some textbooks choose this to be minus plus plus plus, and that in which case the metric is minus is diagonal minus plus plus plus, and both are reasonable. I think that there's one that's more common in cosmology and one that's more common in particle physics. I can't remember which one's which, but there just are conventions in different areas. So if you're looking at another textbook on relativity, be careful and just check what the signs in this expression are, or in this expression here are, because they might be exactly the other way around. And that causes a couple of minus signs elsewhere to change, but it's not fundamentally important. That's a good place to pause briefly. Are there any questions about that? Or happy with that? Or at least unhappy about it to a happy extent? Or content? Question. Oh, excellent. I'll have questions.
If you change the metric to be the minus one plus plus, yeah, plus, does that mean that the whole, like the way we derive the invariant interval before, would that all change the signs in that?
It would, because there would be another minus sign somewhere else in that. So at one point in that definition, I can't remember exactly how it would be different, but there will be another minus sign somewhere in chapter four. I like this way of doing it for this class because this way proper time is positive. So that if two things are two events which are at the same place and the same place in different times, in other words, where there's a watch and observer at both events, the event interval between those is the proper time. That's what the proper time means, and it's positive with this definition, which is, I think, is nice. But yes, so there's an arbitrariness in here. We all have to be consistent, but it is basically arbitrary. Any more for there? Okay. I think I have. Ah, right, yes. Did I? Okay. Quick question. There's two vectors. What's I won't get you to put hands up here, but have a think, and I'll give you a couple of moments to think. What's A dot B, and what's the magnitude of A and the magnitude of B? Just in your heads. Have a pause and talk to your neighbour and work out what A dot B is. Oh, sorry. Oh. Right. Yeah. Quick question. A dot B. Okay, having discussed that and thought about that a bit, any folks? Any want to shout out what A dot B would be?
Zero.
Yep. It's one times two minus two times one. A dot A, what's the length of A? What did you hear there? Not root 5. It would be 1 squared minus 2 squared. So it would be minus 3, would be the length squared of that. And similarly, the other one would be 2 squared minus 1 squared. So what that shows is that those two vectors A and B, 1, 2, 0, 0, and 2, 1, 0, 0, are orthogonal to each other. Now, they don't look orthogonal to each other as you visualize them on the plane, but to the extent that orthogonal means that the scalar product is zero, those two vectors are orthogonal to each other. And so in the geometry of Minkowski space, those two vectors are at right angles. Right angles is the wrong word to use. They're orthogonal. The length of A, the length squared of A, is negative, so picking up the terminology from the end of chapter 4, we call that a space-like vector because its length squared is negative. B dot B is positive. It's something that is pointing along roughly along the time axis. We call that a time-like vector. Okay, so that's a bit of terminology, which is just picking up the terminology we used a couple of chapters ago. The other thing I will mention, because oddly enough I don't have it in the notes, is that this matrix gamma V that we use to transform from one frame to another, we universally label that lambda. I'll use that term happily from now on.
Does a negative sign give you the orientation of space?
An orientation. Does a negative sign give an orientation of space? Right, is this a mathematical question? I think this is an orientable space, in the sense that if you move around it, it's not a Möbius type space. Is that what you meant? Right, I think it possibly wasn't what you meant. Does it give an orientation to space? I think sort of, in the sense that if you remember the diagram with the light cone, that indicates there's a direction in space, in the sense that there's a direction into the future, if you like. So things along the time axis stay along the time axis of any frame that you move into. So they are always in that direction. So that's a sort of directionality to space. I think the word orientation is of a space is something that is done in topology, whatever, which I think is probably not the question you were asking, but I think this is an orientable space. But not. I'll come back to you in a moment. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
See when you're delta, see if you're like asked to write it, would you write it as that matrix, or would you write it as like the gamma minus gamma? Or does it just depend on the situation that you've got?
All right. I think it would depend on the situation, because this is going from a matrix, a space, to another one in standard configuration. I think that there's movement with positive V. So the inverse matrix to that, if you were to look at that and invert it, then you would get a minus sign here and here, which makes sense because from the point of view of the prime frame, the unprime frame is moving in the negative V direction. So you can get that inverse either by thinking of that way, or just minus V, or you can take the matrix inverse of that and discover that minus sign. So that transformation matrix lambda is... I will use that notation to refer to it, and it has the property that if we this is slightly unmotivated, but if we were to you'll have done matrix transformations at some point, you know, how to get from this vector to that vector using a transformation matrix. Possibly not. Has the property that if you do the matrix product of this diagonal matrix eta, and transform that matrix eta into the other frame, what you get is eta. So this metric transformed into the other frame transforms into itself. In other words, the metric is frame independent. In other words, the invariant interval is frame dependent. In other words, the separation between two events at either end of a displacement vector is frame invariant. It's not dependent on the, even though the components of those vectors will change. And that's also a very important point. A question there. Well, the gammas are the gammas. That's a one and a one. The gammas are just the gammas that we let of. Oh yeah, that's gamma v and that's gamma v as well. Yeah, sorry. Zero and zero. Yeah. So it's block diagonal, and you know this bit is diagonal. So the y and the. This is just the me scribbling out the matrix that's in equation 6.3b. For some reason, I didn't seem to have pulled out that that's the point where we'll label that as lambda. Good. We're stepping through this. There's a lot going on in this section. I've seemed to just... say vectors exist, and this matrix eta exists, and that it's important. But there's actually quite a lot. There's a lot going on in this section, because one could talk about the maths in this section quite a lot, because it's talking about symmetry, it's talking about invariance, very important things in maths, and some of the maths that underlie general relativity. So we could go on about this for quite a long time. This is a bit of mathematical technology I'm sort of dumping on you, which you'll get familiar with in the lectures to come, but it is sort of weirdly crucial in the sense that if you study more of relativity, you stay with those things again and again and again, indefinitely more or less. Good. Right. I think that there is not much more to say about that. Good. Okay. So we have, therefore, the displacement vector, delta r, delta t, delta x, delta y, delta z. And we also, what a thing to have to play with, we have the proper time. And remember, the proper time is the time between two events in a frame in which those two events are the same place. In other words, where the spatial separation between those two events is zero. So what we can, so if that displacement vector delta r is like that, we can talk about dr, which is an infinitesimal version of that, dz, and we'll write that, just by the way, as dx mu. But notation here. So in the same way that you might see a vector with components 1, 2, 3, whatever, this infinitesimal vector has components 0, 1, 2, 3. And so I'll write that as dx 0, dx 1, dx 2, dx 3. And the convention is that when I use a Greek index here, I'm using it to refer to indexes 0, 1, 2, 3. When I use a Latin index, you know, IGK, whatever, I'm using it to refer to indexes 1, 2, 3. So just the spatial indexes. That's a standard convention. So we have this infinitesimal displacement. We can divide it by the proper time, d tau, and get dx0 by d tau, dx1 by d tau, dx2 by d tau, dx3 by d tau. All right? And we define that to be the the four velocity u. So remember that if r is a vector, then so will dr be. It has the same properties. Tau is just a number, so d tau will be just a number. So those four things will behave as a vector still. So therefore, this thing behaves as the prototype displacement vector does. Therefore, it's a vector. And we can do the same thing with the four momentum, the four acceleration rather, d2r by d tau squared, which is equal to d2x0 by d tau squared, etc. And we will write things like u mu is equal to dx mu by d tau. But that's just a more convenient notation for the thing at the top. Okay. So let's look at these components in a bit more detail. Now, this is where I'm going to follow my notes quite closely. Taking dr to be the infinitesimal displacement of a particle. So it's just moving through space and time. In a frame in which the particle is not moving, so in the particle's rest frame, it's in that frame, its physical displacement, spatial displacement will be zero, so dx will be zero, and its so the length of that displacement vector will be dr dot dr equals delta tau squared, because that's just the length of the displacement in time in a frame in which the particle has no displacement in space. So that's dt squared minus dx squared, where dx squared is zero. And that's our definition of the proper time. So that means that thinking of this particle that has a displacement in infinitesimal displacement, that displacement in a frame will be dt squared minus dx squared. And I'm going to just now confine this to movement in the x direction and suppress y and z. That dt squared minus dx squared will be equal to d tau squared. Now, if we divide both sides of that by, excuse me, dt squared, we get d tau squared by dt squared is equal to 1 minus dx squared by dt squared. And the notation is getting a bit confusing here, and we just clarify it with that. So that's equal to 1 minus dx by dt squared. And any pure mathematicians can look away just now, okay? Which is 1 minus v squared, which is 1 over gamma squared. Or in other words, dt by d tau is equal to gamma. Or in other words, the rate of change at which the clock, at which the time coordinate in the frame in which the particle is moving with respect to the time coordinate on the particle's own clock is equal to the time dilation factor. So that's another expression of time dilation there. Quite an abstract one, but that's just time dilation happening there again. So the difference between the coordinate time in a frame in which the particle is moving and the coordinate time in a frame in which the particle is not moving is that. And what that tells us, turning the handle a bit, is that u naught, which is dx naught by d tau, which is dt by d tau, is equal to gamma. And ui, which is dxi by d tau, ends up being gamma vi. And you see, I've switched, I'm consistent with this notation. I've used mu as the index for something which goes from 0 to 3, 0, 1, 2, 3, and I've used I, a Latin index, for the spatial bits, where the index goes 1, 2, 3, and so on. So those are the components of the velocity vector in special relativity for a particle moving at speed v. Those are the components in our frame of of the velocity vector of a particle which is moving with respect to us at speed v. And we can also write that out as gamma v x, gamma v y, gamma v z, which is gamma 1 v x, v y, v z. And in a slightly slangy way, we'll also write that as gamma 1 v underline. So this line here is just rewriting this line, making it look like a vector. This line is just taking the gamma out, the common factor gamma, which is just a number, out. And this is just a slightly slangy rewriting of that to indicate that this is still a full vector, where the three spatial vectors are written as a vector. Okay, that's good. Now, I'm going to try and get one more thing done. before we stop, I'll pick up next time. In the because this is a good bit. In the frame in which the particle is not moving, the velocity is zero, obviously. So in that frame, U will be equal to, well, gamma will be 1, because if V is 0, we 1, 0. And in that frame, the length of the velocity vector is nice and simple. It's 1 dot, it's 1 times 1. So U dot U is equal to 1. So the length of the velocity vector in the frame in which the particle isn't moving is 1. But remember that the length of a vector, and the metric, are frame invariant, and what that means is that the length of the velocity vector is invariant, and will be the same in all frames. So in any other frame in which the particle is moving, the length of the velocity vector in that frame with those components in that frame will also be 1. So the velocity vector, so you're used to in 3D space, you're used to the idea that something which is moving faster has a bigger velocity vector. It's the velocity vector is longer, V is longer. In this context, we see that's not the case. The velocity vector is always the same length. But in the frame in which the particle is not moving, the velocity vector is pointing directly along the t-axis. In another frame, the velocity vector is pointing in a different direction. It's the same length in these terms, but it's pointing in a different direction. So when you see something moving at relativistic speed, what you're seeing is its velocity vector foreshortened, if you like, and it ends up looking a different shape, but it's still the same length. And that's a natural place to stop. We'll pick up that fairly directly next time. Oh, I have a quick question here.